This is Windy City Sports Talk, hosted by Will Hatzel. Windy City Sports Talk features all the latest news and in-depth analysis for the Bears,
the Bear,
Bulls,
the Bulls,
Blackhawks, Cubs,
holy cow,
and White Sox.
You can put it on the board, yes!
It's time to talk Windy City Sports.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Windy City Sports Talk. Yes, this is episode 2 of the week here. We're continuing Chicago baseball playoff coverage here. Talked about the Cubs yesterday with Ryan Walsh. So if you're a Cubs fan and want to hear about what we talked about, recapping the Cubs season, and also we gave a little preview of how this wild card series against the Marlins could go. And hey, Ryan Walsh and I actually kind of sounded a little bit right on that podcast, because the Cubs obviously did not play well today, losing 5-1. So today, part 2 of baseball coverage, will focus on the White Sox here, who are tied in their wild card series 1-1, with the series deciding game 3 coming tomorrow against the A's. The White Sox lost this afternoon 5-3 in what was really a disappointing game. Dallas Keuchel couldn't continue that magic from Lucas Giolito on the mound in game 1 the other day. So, but hey, bringing on a good friend of mine who's also a big Sox fan, who could also help put us in some perspective here with the way this team has played this year, and as we head into game 3 of the wild card tomorrow, is my good friend Drew Clawitter. Drew, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. I hope you've been doing well.
I've been doing fantastic. Thanks for having me. A long time listener, first time guest appearance, so I'm just happy to be here.
Yes, you know, we used to talk sports a lot in our days of actually being roommates in college and whatnot, and it's nice to kind of put together a show and have you on. This is the first time I've actually talked to you in a long time, actually, but everything going on, it's, you know, been tough to see each other and whatnot, so glad to kind of hang out with you virtually here, digitally, with the podcast. So thank you for coming on. I do appreciate it, and I look forward to talking to you about the Sox. But hey, before we get into all the nitty gritty here, I just got to ask you, how does it feel to see the Sox in the playoffs for the first time in literally 12 years, over a decade?
Man, it's been a long time coming. I mean, I actually tweeted about it. Last time the White Sox were in the playoffs, we were in fifth grade. And, you know, now freshly out of Ball State, working, trying to do everything I can to keep going with my degree. So it's been a long time coming, a lot of rough baseball to say the least, but it was a great season and really fun to watch.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of complaining and frustration back at the Rec Street house we lived in the last couple of years during our time at Ball State. A lot of, like you said, a lot of rough baseball to watch. Even, you know, I'll give a quick shout out to our buddy Skyler, who we also roomed with, who's also a big White Sox fan. Yeah, there was a lot of complaining and not a whole lot of positivity to go around in terms of talking about White Sox baseball. So it's great to see a turnaround. And also, it was funny yesterday when I was watching the game after Adam Engel hit his home run. It turns out that was the first. It didn't really hit me that it's been that's been this long until I read a graphic that said that was the first White Sox home run since Jermaine Dye did it in 2008. And I was just like, you know how long it's been since Jermaine Dye played for the Sox? Like, that's when it really hit me. Like, I knew I was younger, we were younger, but the fact that, you know, we're talking, you know, the legends that were on the team for the 2005 World Series, like, that's the last time they had a postseason run. Like, that's just wild. 2008, definitely too long. So it was definitely worth, definitely now it seems like it's worth the wait with the way that the team has been. But before dabbling into the playoff series, I just want to get your thoughts on how this altered 60-game season in the middle of a pandemic went. Despite all that playing a factor, obviously, with all the teams and this being the first season that this White Sox team could be fully assembled with the prospects and everybody they've acquired over the years, what did you think of the Sox this year? Did they meet your expectations, or did they exceed them?
I mean, firstly, talking about the 60-game season, I thought overall it was, like, remarkable just for the MLB to come up with it and be able to execute it the way they did. I mean, we look at the NBA, they have a bubble and it's gone off really without a hitch. And obviously now, you know, the NFL with the recent news with the Titans and the Vikings and even college has been just really struggling to get going. So I really give kudos to the MLB for being able to do this season as they did it. I mean, for the White Sox, I'll be honest, they kind of exceeded expectations for me, because when this whole thing started, I talked to my friend Gary, and I was like, you know, if we can just be one game above 500, I'll be super happy, just because we've seen so much losing baseball on the South side. Just to have a winning season would have been amazing. And I said, I mean, my height would be playoff baseball at 35 and 25. That would just be, you know, a goal that would be so happy to reach. And here we sit, you know, game three, deciding game tomorrow. The White Sox, sure enough, are 35 and 25. So they kind of exceeded my expectations. I mean, a lot of young talent, which we've talked about so many times. And that was some of the frustrations I feel with White Sox fans. All the young talent in Double A, Triple A, just waiting to see them come up. Last year, we finally saw Eloy. And then this year, we get to see Luis Robert. So that young talent finally coming up. And I mean, with the shortened season, it felt kind of similar, especially in the second half, to what late August, September baseball feels like. Every game is important. You know, you can't really have those slumps that you would have in the normal season. And unfortunately for the White Sox, Luis is still in a little bit of that slump, but since he is a rookie, I mean, not anything you wouldn't expect, but I mean, they have exceeded my expectations. I talked about in the offseason that we needed to get some bats to kind of contend with the Twins. And I mean, they surprised me, that's for sure, with the amount of home runs that they were just able to get in the regular season.
Yeah, and you know what? A lot of the hype for this year came due to the fact that, again, like I mentioned earlier, it's just, this was kind of the culmination of, you know, all the acquisitions from via free agency, via trade, and then obviously throwing more of the prospects out there. It was great to, this is what we've been waiting for like 4 or 5 years, to be able to see, you know, Tim Anderson, Yoan Moncada, and Jose Abreu, you know, play with some of the newer guys that have been introduced to the team, such as Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, you know, and then some of those huge free agent acquisitions in Dallas Keuchel and Yasmani Grandal. I was excited even with, you know, the signing of Edwin Encarnacion. I know he's kind of, it hasn't exactly been the greatest offensive season for him, but to be fair, you know, sometimes it takes 50 or 60 games in a regular season for these guys to get going, you know, with COVID and everything happening and shortening the season and not having fans and whatnot. It definitely alters the state of play for everybody, every team. So, in a way, I kind of let that go. And I guess, to be fair, a guy like Encarnacion didn't really have to be the most productive guy, because there was, from top to bottom in that lineup, you know, they were able to, heck, they even have 3 or 4 different guys, I guess you could really kind of put in that DH spot because of some of the flexibility with the DH position and the types of batters they got on this team. But in terms of the personnel this year, again, with just finally being able to put the new acquisitions and the prospects together finally in the first year, it was a small taste in the 60-game season. But what were your thoughts in guys like Grandal and Keuchel and Encarnacion and Luis Robert? And I'm even going to put Eloy Jimenez in that list because it's his second year. And again, being one of the top prospects and him having what I would say was a very impressive year for the most part. And again, being in that mix with that young prospect pool, what were your thoughts on some of those young guys and newer acquisitions in their first season here?
I mean, when I saw the acquisitions that we made in the offseason, it finally said to me that, okay, this team is serious. They're ready to win now, especially going out to get Dallas and Grandal. I mean, those were two really big signings that, truthfully, they could have easily went to another team. I mean, we looked last year. I mean, the White Sox were in the running for, you know, Machado and the whole back and forth during the offseason, and then he finally lands with the Padres, who are playing playoff baseball as well. So, I mean, it's just, to me, with all the additions, really showed me that, okay, we see this team, we saw what they did last season, let's go get it now. And, I mean, Grandal started off slow, don't get me wrong, just kind of not what he was last season, and you can't ever ask a player to remake what they did last season. Every season is different, every at-bat's different. You can only expect for them to be similar to what they were last season. Defensively, Grandal was great, what we expected. Offensively, he did start off slow. I mean, wasn't really able to get – I think he got his first extra base hit probably around game 14, game 15, and then didn't get his first home run until probably almost halfway through the season. So he started off slow, and I think you're absolutely right about Edwin. I mean, we got him more, I feel, for the veteran experience. He didn't need to do a whole lot, but, I mean, he still had 10 home runs. The batting average wasn't what you want it to be at 157, but he was still able to produce in the middle lineup. But overall, I'm amazingly happy with the additions we had. I think the biggest addition was Dallas, just because you look at the very start of the season, Giolito goes four innings, and we were like, oh, no, here we go again, all this promise, and then, you know, what's it going to be for? And then Dallas just comes out that next game and is lights out. And truthfully, he was lights out all season, and then you have that little slump where Dallas comes out and, you know, he talks to his team first, which is a really veteran move, and then he comes out and says, yeah, I said, you know, I told the team, what are we doing? Like, we're not playing Major League Baseball. We're playing in the Double-A, Triple-A's. Like, this isn't Major League Baseball. Like, some people are just going up there for at bats, and some people are trying to play the game. So I think that was a real turning point of the season for the White Sox. And obviously we saw what they did there after that. They went on their little run. End of the season, not the best baseball. Offense wasn't there. Pitching was iffy at times. Some of the managerial choices a lot of the White Sox fans weren't happy with. I can see, you know, some of the reasonings why, but overall, I'm super happy about all the additions. Eloy in his second season, just picking up where he left off. Really wish he could stay healthy and learn where the wall is in the outfield, but other than that, I think he was great.
You know, maybe sometime down the road, if they can't figure out Eloy's, you know, defensive mechanics in the outfield, you know, perhaps maybe one day he can just become the full-time designated hitter. However, again, looking at this team where, you know, Grandal catches but could also be thrown in that DH spot or first base, we've seen that a couple of times already. I mean, Jose, in a couple of years, Jose might end up just being the DH, because I know they got some prospects in the works for first base down the line. I don't know how quickly it's going to be for one of those guys to come up, but I feel like right now it's probably not a good idea because there's too many candidates for DH, but I will say I might entertain that opportunity in the future, depending on how his defensive performance goes. I mean, he was better this year. Did he make a couple of like glaring mistakes and huge mistakes? Yeah, but I feel like for the most part, he had a pretty good sophomore year. A lot of times with these young players of any sport, you know, you see a good rookie year, but then sometimes you get that sophomore slump because they're trying to, you know, meet those expectations and that performance they had their first year. And sometimes you struggle to get to that point, or even, you know, they push too hard to even exceed what they did in their first year. But at the end of the day, I was really happy with Eloy. And to be honest with you, everybody, Nomar Mazara is another guy. It's fair to bring him up. He's had some good hits, drove in some runs at crucial times, and his outfield defense in the outfield has been impressive as well. A big reason why they brought him, you know, to Chicago. That's why they acquired him. So the only guy I guess you could really see probably not coming back is Encarnacion, really, because he only signed a 1-year deal. So everybody else has a contract that's going to keep them in town, obviously longer than just this year. But at the end of the day, whatever they do with Encarnacion, I still think it was a solid signing. I mean, he did hit some big home runs this year. So, and who knows, maybe you get some playoff magic from him as well, but we'll see. But before we get into the playoff talks, just one more thing to wrap up our thoughts and conversation on how the season went for the team. One of the big questions between the White Sox fan base is people have been calling for either Jose Abreu or Tim Anderson to win the AL MVP this year. And I was just curious for the heck of it, for fun here, to see if the award was to go to a White Sox player, who do you think is more deserving of it? Is it Jose Abreu, who is proving that just because he's 33 years old, age doesn't mean a thing, and he can put up some of the best offense we've seen in the entire league this year? Or do you go with a guy like Tim Anderson, who's arguably the best hitter in the game right now for the second year in a row?
I mean, that is a tough question. Truthfully, it's just nice to be at the end of the season and be able to talk about the possibility of not only one White Sox player winning the MVP, but now we have two in the conversation. I mean, if I had to go with my gut feeling, I think it'd be Jose, not only for what he's done with his bat, but even defensively. We just take his whole season offensively and defensively. This is probably one of the best seasons he's had since winning Rookie of the Year. I mean, the plays he's been able to make, he's saved a lot of outs from Tim Anderson, from Johan. It's just defensively, he's been a brick wall there, making great plays. And offensively, you look at his stats. I mean, yes, Tim Anderson's second, you know, in batting average, almost had a two-time batting champion. Obviously, DJ LeMahieu was able to beat him out there, but Tim Anderson batting .322, great second season for batting. But then you kind of look at, you know, Jose Abreu, he's batting .317, so not too far behind Tim Anderson. Obviously, you look at the RBIs, Jose drove in 60, won a game. Tim Anderson right there with 21 RBIs, 10 home runs. Jose had 19 home runs. You take the overall season, I don't think there's no way you don't give it to Jose, truthfully. Obviously, Tim Anderson, a great player. He's really been a driving force for the change of the game movement in the MLB. Make the game fun, make it fun to watch. And I respect him for that. I love watching Tim play. I love how much I've seen him grow defensively, offensively. He struggled in his first couple years up with the White Sox, defensively making a lot of unforced errors. His arm strength wasn't where it needed to be playing shortstop. A lot of people talked about, well, what if we moved him to second base? And he's really put in the work defensively to become a premier shortstop. And then he's also put in the work offensively to be a premier bat in this lineup. I mean, we look when he got hurt this season, how the White Sox played with him out of the lineup, and they just kind of struggled. Obviously, that's when we saw a little bit of the resurgence of Luis starting at the top of the lineup. And when Tim came back, a lot of people were like, oh, do you start Tim at the top of the lineup or do you start with Luis? And Tim came in, he's like, no, that's my spot. And he rattled off, I think, 3 home runs in 2 games and then 5 home runs in 5 or 6 games overall just coming back. And that's not, you know, some of the doubles, some of the plays he made. So they both deserve it, but I think there's just no way you don't give it to Jose if you're giving it to a White Sox player.
Yeah, I mean, nothing against Anderson, but the offensive numbers, like, okay, the batting average was great. He had the 7th best batting average. He had .322. That was, you know, 7th best in the entire league. So, I mean, top 10 is huge. And to be honest with you, he probably had a good chance of at least securing the top 5 if he didn't get injured earlier in the season. He only played in 49 games this year. So, obviously, a lot of the guys ahead of him played in – and really, as I'm looking at it, if I had to summarize it, anywhere from 55 to all 60 games. So, you know, obviously missing time like that will hurt your stats as well. But in terms of just the amount of RBIs, the home runs, the, you know, on base percentage. All, I mean, you look at a lot of those like major offensive categories, like statistical categories. Where do you find Jose in the top five or top 10 in most of those? So, and even him with a great average this year, hitting .317. I mean, his career average is .294. So, I mean, this is one of his highest batting averages in his career. And again, just another guy with the fact that he can get on base, the slugging percentage, the power he has, you know, just another guy that it's so good to see him play like this still, because, you know, he's getting older. I mean, he's 33, but those power numbers for him, he continues to rake in the RBIs. I mean, what was it last year? I think he led the AL with RBIs. Yep. So, I mean, even when this team was down and out, he was still producing and coming up clutch, and he's been able to do that for this team this year, even in the circumstances. And it was great to see him finally be in the postseason. I mean, as we said before, you know, the Sox haven't been in the postseason since 2008, and I believe Jose's debut was in 2014 or around that time. So, I mean, the guy, you know, he's been around for quite some time now, but he definitely has not had that opportunity to play in those big games that matter. So it's a really good storyline for the franchise, but I mean, definitely for him too. So, but let's get into the wild card series here. And I want to go in timely order. So we'll talk about game one first. So the Sox, Giolito dazzles in his playoff debut. So does Jose Abreu with another great offensive performance, a couple great swings of the bat. The Sox win that game yesterday 4-1. Maybe some questionable decisions by management with the A's, because they threw out a left-hander, and in the regular season, the Sox were 14-0 against left-handers. So that was one thing that was brought up in the matchup before the game happened, and turns out that's something we're going to be talking about. So starting with game one here, what did you think of Giolito, and were you expecting the offense to bounce back after struggling at the end of the season? Or, again, you just expected this team to come out and do what they did most of the season?
I mean, first, when we talk about Giolito, I mean, he's just been constant all year outside of that first start. He's just been, you know, the guy. And we talked about, you know, beginning of the season, oh, who would be your ace? Would it be Dallas? Would it be Lucas? Like, who's going to be your ace? I think that over the season, Dallas was just a constant presence in the lineup, but Giolito really established himself as the White Sox ace. And just, he showed it yesterday with the game. I mean, just scoreless, gave up, I think, two hits, one run. He had basically a perfect game going through six. He just established himself as the ace. And talking about the offense, really, they decided to throw a left-hander out. It was a big conversation. Truthfully, I don't think you see that matchup if their ace, Bassett, didn't throw against the Mariners, I think, 3 or 4 days before the White Sox wildcard game. I think you might see a different matchup had they not thrown him. But obviously, the matchup was the matchup, and the White Sox proved why they've been so good against left-handers. You start off with the Angle home run in the second inning, and then the Abreu home run in the third inning, just back-to-back, and you finish it off with a Grandal home run. And, I mean, that's been the White Sox all year. They've really been able to hit the long ball very well, especially against left-handers. So it's just one of those games that you're kind of nervous if you're a White Sox fan because, it's been almost a decade, more than a decade, since you've seen playoff baseball. So the anticipation and the nervousness of playing that game, and then, you know, all of a sudden, oh, we're going to throw a left-hander out there. Okay, that kind of eases your nerves, and then you're able to produce offensively, where at the end of the season it really was a struggle short of the last two games against the Cubs to get runs across the plate. And you backed Lucas's fantastic outing And I mean, I don't think you could have asked for a better postseason debut from Lucas. And then the offense coming alive, just a great first game for the White Sox.
Yeah, I mean, they were really in the driver's seat the entire time. You know, Angle hitting that home run in the second inning, and then in the following inning, you know, Abreu sending it 412 feet to increase the lead by two. You know, he had a little slip up by Giolito there at the end in the eighth inning, which led to Oakland's only run. But shout out to the whole pitching staff, really, when, you know, Marshall went out there and having Aaron Bummer back, you know, I honestly think he would have had one of the best years in terms of relievers if he was able to you know, play the whole season. But, and again, just that feel good feeling of seeing everything come to fruition, even Colome getting out there. I know he didn't pitch in a technically a save situation, but again, another guy acquired, you know, prior to the last season, and being able to get him in and pitch in. Again, he's supposed to be a closer, so having him come in and pitch in meaningful games like this finally is huge as well. So, yeah, I mean, not really much to complain about or worry about. I mean, Anderson came out hitting, of course. He hit in the leadoff spot, went 3-for-4. You know, Luis Robert, I think it probably felt good to get the monkey off his back and go 1-for-4 just to at least get a hit. You know, second base worries me a little bit because, you know, Nick Madrigal, I feel like he's had a hard time finding his footing offensively. And I think that's part of the reason why they brought Yolmer back, because just because of the familiarity and the role and whatnot. So I know I feel like second base might be a little bit tricky in terms of offensive production. But to be honest, throwing Madrigal in the ninth spot isn't too bad when you have so many guys ahead of him that you can rely on to get the offense. However, all that fun happiness kind of ended today and kind of crashed and burned pretty quickly because Dallas Keuchel was on the mound. He went only 3 innings, 3 earned runs, 4 strikeouts. And, you know, he 3 earned runs. And, you know, after 2 innings, the A's are in control of this game. They're winning 4-0. And in the fourth inning, they're up 5-0. So really, you're halfway through the game, and you're already in a big deficit. But I think really what kind of killed the Sox was the pitching, because they had more hits. You know, they had 10 hits to Oakland 7. And yeah, Bassett just had a fantastic game. He won 7 innings, 1 earned run, 5 strikeouts, and a walk. So Keuchel, which I believe this was Keuchel's first start back on the mound since getting injured in the regular season, right? Like, I don't think he came back one more time, did he?
Yeah, not to my knowledge. I think this was his first start. Maybe he did get a start, you know, late, you know, against the Tigers in the end of the series. But this might have been his first start since back from the injury.
Yeah, I'm going to look that up while we're talking here. But what were your overall thoughts on today's game, which went a little bit differently, despite probably what a lot of people felt would be a good start for Dallas because he played well this year? And just think, you know, it kind of appeared that the Sox were in the driver's seat here, even going into game two, but obviously that wasn't the case. So what were your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I mean, it was a rough game, to say the least. Obviously, you know, you expect a little more from Dallas. He didn't have his A stuff today. I mean, watching the game throughout, his slider command wasn't there. He was missing his spots. And when you miss your spots, you give up hits, especially against a really good offense like the A's have. I mean, just missing his spots was the biggest thing. He looked frustrated all day. I mean, you kind of even go back to the first inning when the A's score their first 2 runs. Both those runs are off errors. The first one was Tim Anderson just kind of unable to make a play, and then Madrigal had the ball. Granted, it was a hard hit ball. It was hit off the end of the grass and just kind of took a weird bounce. Those were the first 2 runs, and I mean, at the end of the day, the score ended up being 5-3. Those are the 2 runs that were unaccounted for that ended up losing the White Sox the game. But overall, it was really good to see the bullpen come out and be able to just keep it there at five. You obviously have Cordero pitching almost three innings, and he's had a topsy-turvy year, started out really well. And I just think the management just kind of really rode him a little too hard this season, put him in too many games. And toward the end of the season, I think he just started to wear down a little bit and gave up some runs. And that really caused a lot of White Sox fans to wonder why we kept pitching him. And I understood why. He was a really good setup man all year. He didn't allow base runners that were he inherited. I think he allowed one base runner all year that he inherited, and that was the first one since, like, I want to say I remember the stat, since like late 2018. So he's really good with inheriting runners on base. And then obviously Dylan Cease pitched an inning today. Really good work for him. Obviously, we can talk a little bit about game three a little later, but that kind of answers a question that you might have had about game three. And then the bats really didn't get going for the White Sox to start the game. Kind of hard because they hadn't seen the Athletics ace at all. So the first time through the lineup, really easy. The second time, Tim got on base. Johan has hit the ball so well in this series. He just hits it to a player, so that's kind of tough for him, especially in the third inning. Great play by the Oakland A's outfielder that really saved two runs. Just fantastic defense. And then you keep going through the game, getting through the lineup, and obviously he gets taken out beginning of the eighth with Anderson getting on base, and that's really when the White Sox are able to strike. You had a Grandal home run. You had a walk in the ninth inning to obviously end the game 5-3. But the big takeaway I took from this game was they knocked around Dallas a little bit, but the bullpen was able to come in and save it. And then the White Sox are able to get to the A's closer. Made them throw 49 pitches, knocked them out of the game. Obviously, bases loaded, two outs, ninth inning, Jose up to bat. I was just praying that he got up to bat because that could have really been his MVP moment, his Paul Konerko, Jermaine Dye, you know, legacy moment for the White Sox, and just needed to stay back just a little longer on that breaking ball. He might have been able to take it in the outfield or even over the fence. But big thing was that they took out the closer for the A's, making them throw 49 pitches, and you kind of wonder for the setup of the game tomorrow, if it's a close game going in the eighth inning, the ninth inning, do the A's have their closer? I don't think they do, and that's been the best closer in the American League.
Well, they do have definitely some interesting options tomorrow for their starter, their options for who they pick as their starter. They could go with Sean Manea. They could go with Mike Fears. They could also go with veteran Mike Minor. And all these guys are right-handed pitchers, so the Sox aren't going to get very lucky with having another lefty matchup, which would probably bode well with them. You know, not that I don't know if we should be really that worried about these other handful of pitchers that they could throw out there, but, I mean, Frankie Montas has been actually, that's another guy, too. I mean, so they could go with Frankie Montas when he's healthy. He's usually a pretty good starter. I mean, all these guys they got here, I think – in my opinion, I feel like the weakest link would maybe be Mike Minor. I know they did acquire him at the trade deadline, but I mean, when Minor's off, he usually has a bad game and offenses can jump on him right away. I think what happened today with the Sox, honestly, is just the fact that, you know, in baseball, it's tough to bounce back when you're in a hole early. You know that sometimes runs are hard to get by. And, you know, finding yourself down 4-0 after the second inning and then increasing that to that hole to five runs, you know, by the fourth inning, it's even for a good Sox offense, you know, who is, you know, there's some veteran guys there, but as a team, like as a collective whole here as a team, there's very little postseason experience for this group of guys and the way that this team has been put together. I mean, this was playoff game number two for them, so I think, in my opinion, the biggest disappointment was Keuchel. And to be fair, I guess he doesn't really get much of a pass for me because I did look back and see when he came back from the IL, and he actually did pitch two more times to end the season. He pitched 10 more innings against the Reds and the Indians. He did get a victory against the Reds, but then he ended the season with a loss against Cleveland on September 24th. So he did come back. It's not like this was his first go around. I'm actually kind of surprised, to tell you the truth, I'm kind of surprised they didn't throw Keuchel out there in game one. But Renteria probably figured that his main ace is Giolito, and kind of makes sense to throw your ace out there in game one. So in terms of offense for tomorrow, curious, two-part question about offense. How do you feel about the fact that there's going to be another righty going out there, and it could be the likes of, again, Mike Fears, Frankie Montas, Sean Manea, Mike Minor, and also do you have any thoughts on what maybe the lineup should be tomorrow? I know some people have been calling for Encarnacion to not be playing because, again, he's been kind of hit or miss all year. Do you have any thoughts on how you want to see the offense come out tomorrow with what's more than likely going to be another right-handed pitcher?
Well, first, before I get to the offense, I want to, after doing a little research on the ace day in preparation for the podcast and really looking at their pitchers all season, I think we are going to get Mike Fryers. I mean, he's pitched, he started 11 games, four quality starts. He has six wins, three losses. I mean, he does have a little bit of a inflated ERA at 4.58, but I mean, after Bassett for the A's, you're really looking, you know, 4.12, 4.58, 4.50, 5.6, you know, going down to Minor, he has a 5.482 talking about his control. So outside of Bassett, they don't have a huge, you know, arm they can really rely on. Obviously, these pitchers are pitching in the major leagues. They're in the postseason. So obviously they can have great games. If you're a White Sox fan, you obviously wish it was a left-handed hitter, but nonetheless, I think the White Sox can still do damage against any of the pitchers they throw out there tomorrow. Unless, you know, they might even come out and, which would really surprise me, but they could have a bullpen game. The A's bullpen has been the best in the American League for sure, possibly even the MLB this season. So I think that would surprise me if they did that. I think they will go with Fryers. To answer the offensive question, truthfully, it's tough because especially against a right-handed pitcher, I think you're going to see the same, at least top four with Timmy leading off, and then Johan has hit the ball so well. The exit velocity on all his hits have been at least above 95, I want to say. He's just hitting them right to players. I think you're going to see Grandal batting third again. He's had a great two games here, really ended the season on a hot streak. You're going to have Abreu at four to clean up. And then, you know, you kind of – that's when the lineup gets a little iffy. Do you have Encarnacion go in for DH to get that experience? I really liked their game one lineup because you had both Grandal and McCann in there to have McCann or Grandal as a DH, excuse me. Really liked that lineup, but you saw today they pinch ran for Grandal when he got on base with Yolmer. So that knocks Grandal out, and with McCann in the DH, he can't move to catcher. So then if that happens late inning, you'd have probably Zach Collins as a catcher, and do you really want to put a rookie out there to catch? Then you have Eloy, who is his foot good enough to go? I think if his foot's good enough to go, you have to at least try and put him out there. His bat is too valuable to this team, especially in that lineup. So if you have those top five, I think that gives you the best chance to win. And then you're going to have Luis Robert at six, just as a little protection, because if you have Eloy before him, you have Angle after him. Those are two reliable hitters that you have to protect Luis. And he's had his rookie struggles. Don't get me wrong. He's chasing the curveballs, the sliders outside of the zone. But I mean, if you hang it there, he's going to take it yard and take it far. So he's just hit or miss, angle behind him. You have Laurie in left field, and then you have Madrigal finishing it off. It's just kind of one of those things with a right-handed hitter. If Eloy's good to go, you have him go. If he's not, it's a 50-50. Do you risk putting McCann, who's a better bat than Encarnacion this year, or do you put Edwin in there just to save McCann for if he needs to go in to catch? And that's just kind of I mean, thank God I'm not Ricky, because I don't know how I could do that. I mean, he's going to be burned at the stake either way for not having McCann in there instead of Edwin, or, you know, if something happens to Grandal and you have McCann in the lineup, then you have Collins and you're going to have the people like, oh, why is McCann in the lineup? So luckily I don't get paid to make those decisions, but since it is a winner take all, I'd really like to see either Eloy or McCann in that DH spot.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you got to go all out for the win or go home game scenarios here, and it is going to be tough. I mean, as great as it is to have the DH, when you're a team like the Sox, where it's like you're like, well, I could put, you know, three or four different guys at that DH position. I think Eloy being hurt is actually really put them in a difficult position, because if he's not hurt, you can throw him out there in the outfield and play him and have somebody else, you know, fill that DH spot. Because, you know, again, I don't think a guy with an injured foot that has to cover a lot of ground in the outfield, and being that it's Eloy, who, as we know, has some really bad defensive hiccups out there sometimes, I think if he's not 100%, he is a defensive liability big time, because he's injured. He's going to be obviously hampered probably with the sore foot. So, you know, I don't expect him to be able to run as fast or be as agile, which is something obviously you need if you're going to be out there in the outfield. But, and again, I don't really, like I said, I'm even thinking maybe you kind of throw Yolmer Sanchez out there, a guy that is a little bit more proven at second base compared to Madrigal, who, again, hasn't really shown up offensively even during the regular season. I don't know if a win or go home scenario is a great time to have him in the game. I think I'd be comfortable with sitting Edwin in terms of maybe getting McCann out there or somebody else. But again, I like you said, yeah, you're going to feel good about having Collins out there. So definitely it is a tough situation for Renteria. I mean, he's got options, which that's a good thing, but in terms of where you're who's going to catch, who's going to be DH, it's definitely going to be a tough decision that's probably going to keep him up all night. But at the end of the day, he's got the options. And also, regardless, you know, expect to see, of course, there be some strategy later in the game in terms of maybe getting Mazzara out there. You know, maybe Mazzara should start over, you know, Garcia in the outfield too, just because, you know, Garcia just came back. He's been out for a huge chunk of the season. So, in my opinion, you go with the guys that have proven it this year and that are kind of still, you know, in the ready to go, have been playing, you know, mentality, not guys that are just coming back. I think, in my opinion, I think that's what's risky, but we'll see about that. But actually, what I think is an even bigger decision than the lineup is your pitching tomorrow. So, again, your top two pitchers, Giolito and Keuchel, go game one and two. Typically, the rest of your rotation is Dylan Cease, Dane Dunning, and Ronaldo Lopez. Now, Cease did go out there for an inning today, pitched 14 pitches. So, I mean, he could technically be used again tomorrow, but probably not as a starter, I'm assuming. But who would you feel confident in with having go out there and pitch in game three tomorrow in a winner go home scenario?
That's a real tough one, because you're not only affecting the pitching, you're also even then affecting the lineup, because you obviously, as you said, you have the options. Certain pitchers you're going to have McCann behind the plate, other pitchers you're going to have Grandal behind the plate, so that really affects that too. But I mean, looking down the list at the pitchers the White Sox have used all year, obviously you said Cease, Dunning, and Lopez have really been the five this year. You can't throw Lopez out there, even though he does have great stuff, great pitching aspects to him. He's just so unreliable, especially with the win or go home game three. So then you kind of think, oh, Dan Dunning, you know, he has great stuff, but he's pitched in 7 games. He's had 2 starts. So he hasn't pitched a whole lot. He's thrown 34 innings. So then you're like, okay, so that's a little inexperienced. Will the pressure get to him? Then you look down the list. I mean, you still got Carlos Rodon. He's thrown 7 innings this year. He was hurt. Do you think, okay, he's not in the best position. Maybe we use him in the bullpen. Okay. Detweiler has been great this year. Last year he wasn't great. But wait, I don't think he made the playoff roster. So you're kind of really limiting yourself here. You got Gio Gonzalez. You had him sign. He's a great bullpen arm. He can even be thrown out there as a starter. And then, I mean, you have Matt Foster, who can really eat up innings in the middle of the bullpen. You even have this is getting a little more risky, but then you even have a rookie, Garrett Crochet, who's just drafted, thrown 6 innings this year in relief. He has great stuff, great fastball. So, I mean, you do have options, but unfortunately for you, the experienced options aren't your best options, and your best options are going to be your inexperienced guys. So I think, in my opinion, what I would do in this situation, I would have Dan Dunning start with Gio Gonzalez, you know, kind of on call if Dan Dunning gets in trouble the first 2 innings, to eat up those innings in the middle as a reliable closer. And if you can get to the 5th, 6th inning with those two, or even with Dan Dunning, then you roll out, you know, you roll out Foster in the 6th inning, you roll out Bummer in the 7th inning, or either Bummer or Marshall in the 7th inning, truthfully. And then you have the 8th inning, you have Hoyer, you have the other one that didn't get used of Marshall and Bummer. You have Rodon if you need him in relief. You have Cordero. I know he pitched today. You even have Cease. And then you have Colome in the 9th for a save opportunity. So you have a lot of options. You just don't have a lot of experience in your best options. So I think in a win or go home, you have to start your best possibility. And I think that is Dane Dunning, even though he hasn't pitched a whole lot. And you just hope he can eat some innings so you can get to your best arms in the bullpen to really seal the win if you have the possibility.
You know what? I'm totally with you. I think you start Dane Dunning. I get what you're saying about him only technically pitching in seven career games, you know, because he's, you know, another one of those young guys that they finally have got up here pitching. But I just don't, you know, one, given the fact that Cease pitched a little bit today, I don't see him going out there and being a starter. I do think there's a great possibility he gets in there for an inning or two tomorrow, depending on the situation. But I think it would be smart to go with Dane Dunning. Again, look, low experience, only pitched 34 innings, like you said. But, you know, the guy, you know, doesn't give up a whole lot of home runs, only gave up 4 home runs. You know, he's given up only 13 walks. I mean, some, you know, lowest amount of walks compared to the rest of the starters. And he's also been, you know, it's pretty impressive, you know, 35 strikeouts, I would say. So this is a guy that has limited experience, but I think his efficiency, you know, when he's, you know, on the mound has been good so far and impressive in his young career. So I think you go out there with him, but I do think it's going to be one of those games where you're definitely going to see a handful of pitchers and everybody's going to get maybe 2 or 3 innings out there. I also agree with you too. I would be surprised if you don't see Gio Gonzalez in this game, because what was the point of signing him for him not to be that guy in a situation like this where he could either start you a game because he's got that starter experience, or a guy that maybe the second or third pitcher you put in there and you hope he can maybe toss a couple of innings himself. And then, of course, if you could get to ideally if you could get some kind of a lead and throw Colome out there at the end of the game and try to close it out for you, that's, again, that's your ideal situation when in terms of setting up, I guess, the perfect pitcher format or lineup with how you're going to go. So there's definitely options. Unfortunately, you know, we can't get a guy like Keuchel or Giolito back out there. I guess you can't really rule it out if Renteria said, screw it, I need Gio, but then that screws you up if you do happen to win. And, you know, they're going to be playing the Astros. The Astros swept the Twins, which I think is a great thing, but I don't think you sleep on the Astros that much because that's still a very dangerous offense when they get going. So I think, you know, looking ahead in the just-in-case format, you know, you're going to need to keep your aces rested and ready to go for games one and two, I think, against the Astros. But my prediction, I got to stick with this because my overall Chicago baseball prediction is that the White Sox are going farther than the Cubs. After how ugly the Cubs were today, it would not surprise me if they lose to the Marlins, although I originally predicted them to win that series. That in order to stick with my overall prediction of the Sox going farther, I will say the Sox are going to beat the A's tomorrow. They do play at, I believe, 2:10, so it's another early afternoon game. I think it's going to be real close because I'm not sure I'm real confident in the pitching just because there's not a lot of proven guys that are available. I think this could be the Sox walking away, squeezing by with a one- or two-run lead. So as we wrap up here, Drew, for the heck of it, if you were to give a prediction for tomorrow's game, realistically, what do you think happens, given with the situation?
I mean, given the situation, I want to go back and talk just real quick about your prediction for the Cubs because, yes, they did lose today, but a big piece for the Marlins, Starling Marte, is out with a broken hand. So that's a big bat that is now missing. So the Cubs, if they are able to take care of that, I mean, you got Darvish coming out for game two. So that's going to be a big game for the Cubs, obviously. If I had to give the prediction for the White Sox, I agree with you that it's going to be a close game. Right now, the stars are really aligning for the White Sox to make a deeper run in this because obviously the Twins just got swept, adding to now number 18 straight losses in the playoffs for the Twins. Got swept by the Astros. So if the Sox can squeeze by, I felt this was the best path they had to the Final Four if they were able to get by the A's and have the Astros instead of the Twins. Just because, I mean, that Astros bullpen is so depleted after losing Verlander. I mean, they really lost their top two, and now they have Greinke, obviously. But other than that, I'll be honest, I can't name another starter that they have. Obviously holding a very talented Minnesota lineup down is very impressive. But I agree with you. I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a game going into the eighth or the ninth inning. But I think in the end, the White Sox offense finally appears after a very long slump, able to get some relief runs in late innings. And I think you're going to look at a White Sox victory. I'm going to say probably a 7-3, 7-4 ball game tomorrow, just because I think Dane Dunning has a great, great inning or two at the beginning, struggles in the middle innings, but he's able to get out of it. Then you're going to see Gio eat up an inning or two to get to the back of our bullpen, which, I mean, I don't think we've seen the back of the White Sox bullpen fully healthy since probably the second week of the season because Bummer went out and you've had other injuries throughout. But if we can get a one or two run lead in the back of the back of the bullpen, I think they can hold it down. And I think the White Sox offense is dangerous enough that it's been a struggle. Obviously we were able to score 5 runs the first game, 3 runs today, but we haven't seen that pop that we saw in the middle of the season. I think Luis will finally break out of his slump. I think he'll be able to get an extra base hit or something to really get a late rally going. And I think that's going to be the difference. That's going to be my X factor, truthfully, for this series, was going to be Luis if he can break out of his slump, because we've seen what he can do defensively. But offensively is where he can really be a defining factor for a baseball team. And I just think that he'll be able to break out of it, and he'll be able to carry the White Sox to a victory tomorrow. And then obviously they'll move on to the Astros.
Yeah, I think honestly, if the pitching staff could hold their own, I like the Sox offense more than the A's. I think there's just more consistent hitters with guys like Anderson, and then obviously a handful of guys that have, you know, power in their bats too. One thing that I'm surprised nobody really mentions much is that the A's are without Matt Chapman too. Their third, I believe, he plays third base. Their third baseman. Yeah. I believe he's out until next year. So
they're without Chapman, but then they went and got Lamb from the Arizona Diamondbacks. So they really replaced one great bat with another good bat. He hasn't had a great year. He didn't have a great year for Arizona. That's why he got a designated free agent. And luckily for the Athletics, they were able to pick him up right when Chapman got hurt. So he's had a resurgence with the Athletics. So, I mean, that is a very key piece that they are missing, but they were able to replace it with a good piece there.
Yeah, true. No, that actually all ended up happening with perfect timing. And in terms of Starling Marte with the Cubs, believe it or not, he's optimistic to hopefully play. I mean, it was his pinky, so I mean, I guess he could probably play through it. I mean, obviously that will impact the swing, impact the way he plays. Assuming maybe he's just a game time decision as well, because again, really, until you get out there and swing, until you get out there and try to test the mobility of that hand, I guess we'll really tell. So that could help the Cubs catch a break there. And yeah, Darvish on the mound, he's had a good year, but we know he's had issues in the past, even in the postseason. So we'll see what happens with the Cubs there. But you know, fingers crossed for both teams. You know me, I'm 50-50. I'm just all about covering Chicago or supporting Chicago sports, so I don't really pick one team over the other when it comes to baseball. But hopefully both of these teams can continue to play, because honestly I think it's just better for the city that, you know, we'll have both teams in the playoffs and hopefully can make deep runs, and let those in the fan bases that want to chirp at each other, let them chirp at each other. So, but thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
No problem. I'm happy to be here. Happy to talk to you again. It's been a while. I know we've all been caught up with our life, especially, you know, with all the things going on. I hope you're happy. Hope you're healthy. And to finish off the podcast, I've talked about it with a couple different people up here. And wouldn't be the most 2020 thing with everything that's happened to have a White Sox-Cubs World Series held outside of Chicago.
I love it, because just for the fact of seeing both teams, and yeah, of course, I don't know, maybe we can get a petition to go around to say, hey, bring this to Chicago, because they actually did announce today, apparently, I forgot what stadium the World Series is going to be held in, but apparently they're going to allow 10,000, Globe Life Field. So they're apparently going to have 10,000 fans at the World Series. So listen, I'm going to be calling the league office and saying, hey, you're going to bring this to Chicago if we got to that point. And unfortunately, I don't see it happening. The Sox, I think, definitely have a chance to make it. I haven't bought into the Cubs for the last couple of weeks, so I'm going to live and die on that hill, Drew.
Yeah,
so.
They got to get through the Dodgers. But I really don't see any, unless like some injuries happen, I just don't see anyone on the NL just getting through the Dodgers. I even think whoever wins the AL is going to have trouble in the 7-game series against the Dodgers team. So, I mean, good luck to the Cubs. I'll say that.
Okay, one of these years are going
to
win.
They have to.
One of these years the Dodgers have to win. Like, how many of these great years are they going to have and not be able to make it? And they even got better, you know, obviously in the offseason with that trade against with the Red Sox. So, I mean, they're just with getting Mookie Betts. I mean, that's a team that they just keep loading up. So it's like you think, okay, any day now. So, but anyways, thanks again, Drew, for joining me today. I'll definitely reach out to you again. We can maybe talk some more baseball or football or basketball or something, whatever you want to talk about. I like to get people on more than just one time, because it's nice to kind of follow up with previous thoughts and conversations. So, and thanks to everyone that's been listening. Again, remember, you can find this podcast on anchor.fm, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, really just, you know, Google Windy City Sports Talk, and you'll find it on about 9 or 10 different podcasting platforms at this point. And we're seeing a resurgence in listenership. We're seeing a surge in people subscribing and liking the podcast, favoriting it, whatever it is, on whatever platform you check it out on. If you could do that too, I would appreciate that. And heck, even leave a review. All that stuff is key to getting, you know, spreading the awareness out there of this podcast. And we're seeing some growth, and it's motivating me to continue to make podcasts. And I got a couple other things cooking up. Next podcast, we'll be talking about Billy Donovan becoming the Bulls head coach, and I'm trying to score a big guest from somewhere, hopefully. So I got a couple of things in the works here. So be sure to continue listening and paying attention, because the next couple of weeks, next couple of months, definitely some really good content planned as I look to continue growing this brand. So thanks again to everybody, and go White Sox and go Cubs.
Thanks for listening to Windy City Sports Talk. You can find more episodes on anchor.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Until next time, be well.